So, straight into our guests this morning, who have arrived nicely on time, the second in our monthly feature, looking at the Capturing Cambridge project. In the studio this morning, Dr. Shelley Lockwood and Hilary Cox, who I'll get right this time, because actually Hilary is a staff member. I called her a volunteer last time, not that there's anything wrong with that, really. Capturing Cambridge encourages people of all ages to discover the fascinating and inspiring history of our streets, and it's a project we introduced to you last month. I'm delighted that both ladies are back in the studio with me again this morning. How are you doing, both?
Fine, thank you.
Now, Shelley, you've come hot foot from an event yesterday.
Last night I had a lovely evening with our friends at the Mill Road History Society, giving an oral history taster session, trying to inspire, give confidence, encourage people just to give recording memories a go. To get out there and try, you know, everyone can get an app on their phone these days and practice listening to people and recording those memories and then learning how to share them. And that's what we spent the evening doing yesterday.
So that's how you do it, just a smartphone device?
You can do.
Whether it's an Android-based one or a fruit-based device, you know the one I mean. it comes loaded normally with an app on board anyway, because it's like a voice recorder.
And it's a great way to practice, or tablets and iPads and so on, that you can do it in lots of different ways. In order to create an oral history archive, you need to do a more professional style of recording involving a digital recorder, but it's actually very easy to use.
And so we have the digital recorders at the museum, don't we? And Shelley can instruct people how and the best way to record oral history, and also we can loan out the equipment that we have there if anybody's interested in developing their own projects.
So as you mentioned, in case listeners weren't with us last month, at around about 11:30 on the Wednesday mid-morning show, you've come in nice and early for us today. You're based at the Cambridge Museum, what used to be called the Folk Museum, at the foot of Castle Hill, shall we say, on Castle Street, junction with Northampton Street. Can't miss it, really. It is actually a prominent spot. It's a pity it's not really central Cambridge, because I'm not sure it really always grabs the tourists on the beaten trail.
It is a lovely building. It's a 17th century coaching inn, and it is a beautiful building. And actually, it is in what was the original historic centre of Cambridge, of the first settlement of Cambridge. So we always like to say we are in the centre of Cambridge.
Rest of Cambridge that isn't there.
Yes, it's true. We can move everything in there, Hilary, into the right direction. But yeah, I mean, inside, it's just a world unravelled right back to, what, the 17th century, I suppose, which is when it was begun. I mean, there's an old pub, complete with... I know these have got an old
snug's still there.
Yes.
The bar area is still there. It's a fantastic building.
The lead blacked grate, although I don't think we can use lead black these days, but you know what that is from years ago. Would use it on the hearths and on the grates of the fire to make that. I mean, it's beautifully bright. And even the creaky floorboards to boot.
Lots of creaky floorboards. And a few ghosts too.
Are there now? Tell me more before we move on. Are we able to...
People have heard and seen a cavalier in boots, a woman in a white gown, and there was a secret room in the museum that was discovered with some building work that just had a single chair and a lady's lavender lilac colour dress draped over the back.
And it was a blocked room up. Completely, no doors or windows to it, so it was unearthed when building works going on.
Trying to investigate that further.
The site would have been there during the English Civil War. Do we know whether the Cavaliers or the Roundheads sort of holed up or walled up in that? I should know, because obviously Cromwell's men were very big because they were nearby. So it was really the parliamentarians that were strong in Cambridge. But any history of whether they were using that building, do we know?
Well, that's what we'd like to know, because that would help us with unravelling who our cavalier was.
So, Shelley, what was the response like last night? We went along to the Mill Road History Society to talk to them.
It was lovely. I mean, people were so enthusiastic and wanting to get involved, and it was really a question of just overcoming the fear of the technology and the fear of not doing it properly. And so most of what I was doing was saying, look, anyone can do this. And just, it's better to have any recording than none, especially when you're capturing the memories of older people. You know, if you delay because you're not sure you're going to do it right, you end up missing the opportunity.
Oh, we had such a lovely quote from somebody at one of our drop-ins recently who was really keen to get more involved in recording older people's memories. And he said that as we lose people, as people die with these memories, it's like a library burning down. Yeah. So if you don't record them, it's like a library burning down. What a beautiful quote. Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost history crumbling into dust, sadly, when people die. I mean, people in their 90s now that, of course, served or remember World War II. And one memory is the ARP wardens in Cambridge. Now, they were up on the top of the very, very new at that time, built in the 1930s, Cavendish Laboratory, which is on the new museum site, if anybody knows that part of Cambridge. It's sort of within the walls of Cambridge University and many departments there, including the Department of Engineering. But it was brand new in about 1936. And during the war, the government confiscated it for the war effort, and research started going on there towards radar and other sort of hush-hush, very hush-hush things at the time. But it was a tall building, and so it was used for the steel helmets are donned on people. They obviously had the gas masks and satchels around them. And young men were stationed up on the roof, a bit like Home Guard, but probably those that hadn't quite gone to bear arms and serve on the front lines, to fire watch over Cambridge. So if the Luftwaffe came over with incendiary devices, they would see where the Luftwaffe were coming from, which direction, and maybe where these incendiary devices are going. So they could get on the old-fashioned telephone and let the fire department or the auxiliary fire service, the AFS, which was deployed during the war. And we had it here in Cambridge.
And, of course, we'd love to hear anybody's memories or family stories of that. Can I say something about an exhibition that we've got at the moment going on in the museum? With the launch of Black History Month this month, we've got a digital exhibition showing photographs of many, many different soldiers from different countries that were involved and fought for or with the British Army in the First and Second World Wars. And this Friday, we're holding a memory workshop in the Enid Porter Room at the museum between 2:30 and 5:00, isn't it, Shelley?
Yeah. Yep.
Asking for people's memories of soldiers from different countries that fought in the First and Second World War. Many, many different countries, different nationalities, backgrounds, really interesting. We've then got an exhibition of Black and Commonwealth soldiers that fought, and this has been put together by a woman called, oh my goodness, I'm going to forget her name.
Selina.
Who set up the Black Poppy Rose. And founded the Black Poppy Rose, didn't she? And she's going to be talking at the museum, Selina Corley, her name is, between 5:00 and 5:30, about Black and Commonwealth soldiers in the Second and First World War that fought with British.
So the Enid Porter Room, it's buried sort of within your Cambridge Museum complex.
Yeah, it's in the courtyard.
Go through the courtyard to the back from your Castle Street entrance and you find it there.
And Enid Porter, if you don't know who she was a curator that we had at the museum.
She was curator for 40 years and she lived on site. Her cottage that she lived in on site has been demolished and it's now, the new building is all of our offices. But Enid lived on site and she is our kind of poster girl for oral history and collecting memories, because what she did was listened to people. She invited people into the museum and listened to them and recorded their stories, but also she went out and about. And there's a lovely bit of film, we've got a link to it on the Capturing Cambridge website. The Enid Porter Project did a film explaining that Enid used to write down and record stories she heard people exchanging on buses, in waiting rooms at the hospital, at Addenbrookes, and so on.
Is it lovely to eavesdrop on people?
It
almost seems like it's nosy, but it's not. It is a gem. I mean, some of the recordings in the East Anglian Film Archive are fascinating for
absolutely.
People as well. I don't want to divert them from your project.
No,
but
we're happy to share them.
From Cambridge in the 1930s, when there was, until actually later on, Marshall's dealership was on Jesus Lane, and they were selling Rovers and other cars from there until I think the 1980s. But the garage on that site goes back to the early days of the motor car, with Austin A7s and spoked wheel cars. And there's a wonderful film which is made black and white, silent, of that showroom, and bicycles are on sale there, and bicycles are being repaired there as well. And also military vehicles are brought in. The army actually had them serviced and maintained in Cambridge. It's some fascinating footage.
Fantastic.
From around about 1939-40, just as the war effort was really picking up.
We've just been collecting a lot of stories and memories about different shops, haven't we, and different shopping experiences actually in Cambridge, sort of people remembering McFisheries and Jenny's Separates, talking about the Stern staff at Jenny's Separates.
Jenny's Separates. What was this then?
It was a ladies' fashion shop.
Yeah.
Yes. I think you stepped through the door slightly at your peril. With the staff, pouncing on you to see what you wanted.
Sainsbury's, the queues at old Sainsbury's. We've been talking about remembering as children being next to the tiles with all the the tiles of the fish and the cows and the sheep on the tiles.
That's right. I remember
lots of different queues.
Very clinical. Very cold and clinical as a place because it just was ceramic, a ceramic fest of tiling. And a tiled, I think it even had a tiled floor in it. I don't know. So, I mean, if it ever got washed down, it must have been really slippery. And we were saying last month about McFisheries on Petticurry and how they would literally wash out, sluice out McFisheries every morning. They would hose the place down and sweep it out onto Petticurry. And the waft of fishy smell, I remember as a child, as you'd walk along there from the... Of course, all gone now, because in 1974, of course, Princess Anne, as she was, opened... Lineyard. But it was all along that.
I'm still loving to collect all these memories, exactly as you're saying, Phil.
Well, we had a wonderful one of someone was clearly transported back to his childhood, talking about the extraordinary sucky noise of the pneumatic tube system whizzing around the shop. I think it was Joshua Taylor or possibly Eden Lilly. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one. But talking about secretly stuffing his sweet wrappers into one of the little capsules that's supposed to be going around the system.
I was fascinated by, again, Laurie and McConnell's. Now, that was on Fitzroy Street, a large department store here in Cambridge, and they used to have this vacuum tube system. So the cashiers would cash up a few times every day. It's obviously when they got large denominations of money for security. And as you say, it used to be this pneumatic system would probably send it somewhere to some back cash office and off it would go in the system.
And at McFisheries, I think you ordered your fish and were given a receipt of some kind. And the order was sent away up to the cashier whilst the fish was prepared. You then went and presented your half of the receipt to the cashier and got your prepared wrapped fish. So there's a whole different, such a different way of shopping.
So if you're inspired by this, calling all volunteers, Shelley and Hilary would love to hear from you. You could actually just knock on the door, I suppose, at the Cambridge Museum.
On Fridays, Friday afternoon, we have community drop-ins. Come and see us then. That'd be lovely. Come see
We're
us
always
for a cup of tea and a chat.
And go and have a look at your wonderful website, too.
Yes,
I mean, this is absolutely astonishing. It's one of them. Locally sourced, it's one of the best websites to go and have a look. I tell everybody, please go and have a look at this.
And we are getting more community editors, which is really exciting. They're posting up on there. So on the 17th, we're going to be having another training session, and we've got... Fons Chamberlain, Cambridge historian, is going to be one of our community editors, and Anthony Carpen as well, who's been researching Lost Cambridge, is going to be on there. Pat from 100 Years of Coconuts is going to be posting out. So it's a really fantastic collaboration of lots of local people and groups as well.
So Pat's the archivist at Cambridge United.
Yes, he is.
He'll be joining you. We must get Pat in on the show as well sometime.
Yes, he must. Yeah. He's lovely.
Yeah. I've got some programmes from about 1959 of the old Cambridge United. It might be worth a few bob, as we would say in those days.
Yeah. And actually, they started as well. They tested out their exhibition in our community cabinet at the museum. So it's great. I feel like we've had a really good partnership in developing both Capturing Cambridge and 100 Years of Coconuts and their museum there. It's been mutually supportive, I think,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
So if listeners feel like, well, they can get their hands around the technology, it's really very simple to do. And also you'd like any volunteers then that could do the editing in turn? Or
absolutely.
Would the editing go forward if you get people to catch or capture audio from, say, older people who have memories from the 1930s, 40s
absolutely.
In Cambridge, 1950s, of course, right through to, well, even the 1980s. I mean, the Queen coming to Cambridge to open the Grafton Centre in 1983, I think it was. Huge parade of us all standing, including myself, on Hills Road to see the royal car come from Cambridge Railway Station for the Queen, Her Royal Highness, to come and cut the ribbon, which she did at Grafton Centre.
And groups as well, getting different groups together. You know, talking to Jimmy's at the moment about having guests there, interviewing people that they're interested in, telling their own story. Rowan, the arts charity working with adults with learning disabilities, they are working on a river project that we're collaborating with them and boaters as well to gather stories about the river. And we also, can we put a shout out for 80-year-olds, please? We need some 80-year-olds.
Some octogenarians out
yes.
there.
Well, you were saying about 1936 and the ARP and so on the new museum site. 1936 was the year the museum was founded. Was born, so we are 80 years old this year.
As the Cambridge Folk Museum
yes,
at the time.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
and our
right.
birthday is the 3rd of November.
Going to be doing something special?
On Friday, the 4th of November, we have a birthday tea drop-in. Our community drop-in is a celebration of 80 years of the Folk Museum, as was. And we'd love to share our birthday cake with some other 80-year-olds from Cambridge and to just gather memories.
I must see if I can get my father down to come and see. He's
lovely.
90, so does 90. He still count?
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
He's not too old. Yeah, I mean, maybe we can get him
on. Well, that is perfect, because, of course, he would have been 10.
Well, we'll see if we can get him
opened,
on tape.
So
he
was that's
actually,
even better.
Yeah. I mean, he spent some time in digs in Cambridge in the early part of the war, and the very gentleman I was talking about, who was an AARP warden on the Cavendish Reef, who am I talking about?
Excellent, your dad.
My dad.
Yeah.
So we're getting
fantastic.
Into it.
I should say, talking about the air warden, and on the Capturing Cambridge website, we do have some oral history recordings already, and two or three of them mention the wartime service, particularly in Cambridge, mentioned it being, we have an ARP warden on there as well. So, and lots of talk about memories of wartime Cambridge.
Fantastic, ladies. There's so much going on.
There is.
So just a quick plug for your website, finally.
Yes, well, the website is www.capturingcambridge.org. Please do go and have a look. There's a contact form on there if you'd like to get in touch with Hilary or I that way. Come to see us at the museum. Also, the museum website is www.museumofcambridge.org, and we
follow
have a new leaflet.
Facebook.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Museum of Cambridge, and we have a new leaflet detailing everything that's out now, so you can join our mailing list and get an e-copy or pick one up at the museum or the central library.
We'll see you again next month, I hope.
Great. Lovely, thank you.
Come and join us again. Dr. Shelley Lockwood and Hilary Cox from the Museum of Cambridge.
Thank
and,
you.
Of course,
Thank
their
you.
Website, Capturing Cambridge. Go on the website to find out more. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.